I'm Lacey. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Lacey.
Can you guys hear me? Yeah? thanks for having me. I am going to kind of just do the same thing, share a little bit about, you know, my life and how I got sober and what it was like before. So, you know, I came from a loving home too. I didn't have anything traumatic happen to me as a child. You know, my real dad left when I was little, but I had a great stepdad that supported me and loved me. But I never really felt a part of. And, you know, in high school, I got through school. I didn't really get good grades. I didn't play any sports. I didn't dance. I didn't do any of that kind of stuff. So I kind of found, you know, where I fit in was when it came time to party. And so that's what I did. You know, in high school is when I drank my first time. And I remember finally feeling a part of and kind of feeling a little bit of relief. And so through high school, you know, I partied like what I thought was a normal high school student. And I drank and smoked weed. And I barely graduated high school, but I did. In high school, I got a boyfriend, and after we graduated high school, my boyfriend started to sell OxyContin, and so, you know, drinking on the weekends and maybe a couple times here and there, it was, you know, there was something different. There was something that was always around, and so we started to get into that, and we did that for quite some time, and you know, it became too much money for us to continue that habit, and because he quit selling it. And so that's when we turned to heroin. And I did that for probably maybe 6 months. And my parents, and I remember the first time I did that and just feeling like a feeling of almost peace. And my parents, after about doing it for 6 months, my parents intervened, and at that point I hadn't really lost too much. You know, I still was able to maintain a job and barely, and my car was about to get repoed, but my parents came in and saved me, and they sent me to detox at LDS hospital. And I went to detox, and I spent 7 days in detox. And I'm the type of person that for a long time was, you know, if you can just get me to detox and get me detoxed off the drugs, then I'll be okay. I don't have to do anything after that point. And so I went to detox and spent 7 days there, and I didn't touch heroin after that or any opiates for 4 years. But I drank like an alcoholic, you know, but I thought I was doing well because I wasn't doing drugs anymore. And so, you know, my life was somewhat manageable. I'm not doing heroin anymore, but I mean, at the bars every single night, blackout. And I would go out with my friends with every intention of not getting shit-faced. Like, they would be like, hey, please don't get so drunk tonight, okay? Like, maybe have one or two drinks. And I would go and have every intention of doing that and just end up blacked out, you know, terrible, terrible alcoholic, and amongst other things. So, you know, 4 years goes by, I get a really good job, and I decide to have surgery done. And I have this surgery, and they prescribe me pain meds for my surgery. And it was almost like instantly once that taste was back in my mouth, it was over, you know. And I had even discussed with my parents, like, hey, let's, you know, I haven't done this for 4 years, but I want to make sure I'm going to be okay. And they held on to them. And it was just like that craving was back. And at this time I was working at CR England, the trucking company, and I was doing accounts payable for them. And I met another man, Nick, pattern. And, you know, when I met him, I thought things were great. He was an alcoholic now that I look back on it. And he was, you know, such an asshole to me. And, but I would take my pain pills. I found my pain pills. My parents hid them. and I replaced them with vitamin C, and thinking that I would get away with that. And my poor dad had shoulder replacement surgery, and my mom was like, oh, let's not get your pills filled. We'll just use Lacey's, and he was taking vitamin C. But so my, you know, my boyfriend would drink, and he would treat me like crap, and me having absolutely no self-worth at that time, I would just, you know, put up with it. But when I would take these pain pills to his house and we would eat the pain pills, he wouldn't drink, and he was nice to me. And so I would take them up there and we would eat them. And so from that time, it's when we started to take those, I went from taking Percocet to doing Oxycontin to IV Oxycontin to heroin to speedballs, all within a year and a half time frame. And it was just like out of control. It just, you know, it was, I lost everything. You know, we both lost our jobs at CR England. We had a condo, we lost that. Both of us lost our vehicles. And I pawned everything I owned. And, you know, I had nothing. And I had burned bridges with my family. I ended up somehow going back to detox and spent 4 days there and relapsed with him 4 days after I got out. And, you know, my mom tried to get me to do all this stuff and I just wouldn't do it. I didn't want to do it. And in the meantime, I ended up getting an apartment and somehow lived there for a little while I was there. You know, I ended up going to jail. I overdosed, and none of these things were enough for me. Like, you know, going to jail, overdosing, and ended up getting kicked out of my apartment, ruining relationships with families. You know, I had to go to the ER for an abscess on my arm, and you know, it was just really infected, and none of these things were enough for me. And finally, you know, I called my mom and I was like, you know, I'm homeless. I don't have anywhere to go. And she was like, well, you can come back and live here, but you have to do 30 days inpatient treatment. And I was like, no way, not doing it. You know, I just wasn't ready to do it. And my boyfriend at the time was going to Colorado. His sister owned an apartment complex out there to try to get away from everything. And so I was like, well, I'll go with you. And so I called my mom. And I asked if I could come get some clothes because all I had was the clothes on my back, just walking around. And she was like, I don't want you at my house, but I'll meet you in your high school parking lot. And, you know, just to kind of paint the picture of where I was at, my mom hadn't seen me in like 6 months. And I come walking up to my mom's car and I weigh maybe 90 pounds and, you know, I have dreadlocks, not on purpose, but because I haven't showered in who knows how long. I'm filthy. I'm covered in track marks from head to toe. And my mom is just looking at me, hasn't seen me in 6 months. And she's like, you're going to die if you go to Colorado. Like, you're going to die and I'm never going to see you again. And my poor mom, you know, like, this is like an emotional part of my story, sorry. But later she told me in treatment, when I ended up going to treatment, you know, that she went home that day and mourned my death for 5 days and couldn't get out of bed just because I looked so terrible. And I did. I looked so terrible, you know. But it was like in one ear and out the other. I didn't care about my mom. I didn't care that she thought I was going to die. I was selfish and I wanted to do what I wanted to do. And I got right back in the car and I did drugs and I went to Colorado. And I got to Colorado. And, you know, I wasn't done doing drugs. I actually ended up having my drug dealer send me drugs through the mail, through FedEx, ship them from here with my name on it, right to my apartment in Colorado. And, you know, drugs, you find drugs anywhere you go. You know, the geographical change doesn't work. And things just went from bad to worse in Colorado. And so we're there and I wrecked my boyfriend's brand new car high. And so, you know, I was there for about 9 months. The last 3 months is when I wrecked the car. So we're stuck in this apartment complex and it's filthy. There's dishes everywhere. You know, like sheets over the blanket or blankets over the windows, and just filthy. We have no vehicle to get anywhere. We have no money for food. We have no money for anything. No money for food. Like, walking to the gas station to, like, steal a sandwich every other day just to be able to eat. We had pawned our TV. So just sitting in this house and no money for cigarettes, like, buying, like, smoking cigarette butts off the ground outside. And I just looked at my boyfriend, this person that I loved and been with for 5 years, and I looked at him and was like, what happened to us? How did we end up this way? How did we end up so miserable? And I was so miserable. It was like Groundhog Day every single day, the worst day of my life over and over and over again. And I had something shift in me that day, and I was like, I can't do this for one more day. Like, I will not make it if I have to live like this. And so I called my mom and told her that I was ready to get help. And I took a 17-hour bus ride home from Colorado in full-blown heroin withdrawals, which, like, think of, like, being on a bus ride for 17 hours sober. That's horrible, you know? But sick, that was the worst day of my life. And, you know, it was really hard for me to leave that relationship. That relationship was harder for me to kick than it was to kick drugs. And I was blessed enough to go to treatment, and I spent 45 days inpatient treatment. And while I was in treatment, I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the very first meeting that I ever went to was a closed AA meeting, and it was a bunch of old timers. And I remember I was at the meeting, and they said, you know, the good news is there's a solution, and the bad news is we're it. And I remember going back to treatment and, like, honestly, like, almost in tears, because I was like, I'm never going to stay sober if that's what I have to look forward to, is this for the rest of my life. And, you know, but I kept going, and somewhere along the line, I was, you know, willing to listen and, like, you know, not focus on the differences as much as, like, the feelings there. And, you know, I graduated treatment, and I kept going, and I jumped headfirst into the fellowship, and I did all the things that are suggested. I got a sponsor, and I started to work the steps, and, you know, I didn't understand the steps. I didn't believe in God when I got here, and, you know, but I did what I was suggested, because I was in enough pain to do it, and I didn't want to go back to where I was. And little by little, with each step, you know, my life started to change a little bit, and I felt a little bit of relief. And things just started to get better. And I remember, like, being in meetings when, you know, when I was brand new, and, like, seeing people pick up 60-day chips, and I'd be like, there's no way you're 60 days sober. 60 days in a row, like, you're lying. There's no way that someone could stay sober for 60 days. And, you know, now I'll have 18 months next week, and, you know, my life is really pretty good today. You know, I work at the treatment center that I went to now, and I actually just got a promotion there, and I, you know, have a car, and I have a place to live, and I have people that love me, and I've repaired the relationships with my family and my friends, the bridges that I thought I had burned and would never be able to repair. And, you know, I have a relationship with God today that I never had my whole life. You know, I was baptized LDS, and I just, like, you know, a lot of people in these rooms never felt the connection in that church. And, you know, it wasn't until I was almost 6 months sober that I really felt that. When I first got sober, I cleaned houses, and I cleaned this house every Tuesday, and I never would clean the master bathroom though. And, you know, I'd been praying and trying to work towards it, but I never felt it, never felt anything from my higher power. And, so my boss told me to go and clean this bathroom, and told me that she would be in there in a second. And I'm putting stuff in the drawers, and I open the drawer, and there's, like, 6 bottles of oxycodone in this drawer. And I was just like, you know, it's kind of like when you go to the fridge and you open the fridge and you close the fridge and you go back in a few minutes and, like, open the fridge. I kept doing that. I kept opening the drawer and, like, closing it and opening the drawer and closing it. And I didn't know what to do at that point, because I didn't want to go to my normie friend and be like, hey, I'm about to steal these pills. And I didn't have my phone in there, so I couldn't call my sponsor. And I couldn't get to a meeting at that moment. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to pray. Like, that's really my only thing that I can do right now. And I went in the closet of this bathroom and I started praying. And it was almost, it's like something happened. And I felt like just like so much peace. And like 2 minutes after I was done praying, my boss came in and was like, you can, you know, you're done in here. Go finish up in there. And it was like that. That's when I knew that God was with me. And that's when I felt like that's what this program is about. It comes down to like the spiritual foundation that you have. Because sometimes someone doesn't answer the phone, or you can't get to a meeting, or you can't call your sponsor. And that may be your only defense at that moment between you and that next drink or drug. And, you know, I have a faith in God. And I just see things a lot differently today than I ever have, even before I started drinking. It's like I have a new appreciation for life, and I have a purpose, and I found in Alcoholics Anonymous what I was looking for my whole life. And, you know, I get to walk around a free person today, and, you know, free of the bondage of drugs and alcohol and the bondage of self. And, you know, I'm really grateful for this program. It saved my life. It really did. And, you know, I try to do something every day for myself. And, you know, if staying sober is the only thing that I do that day, then so be it. But, you know, service helped me a lot, being of service. And, you know, working with other women in this program has helped me. I'm grateful for the life that I have today, and it gets crazy. It really does. And sometimes I'm like, you know, is all this worth it? Like, it's not just not drinking. Like, there's so much more to staying sober and being happy. And, but it's definitely worth it. And like Jared said, like, sometimes I do have to play the tape through, because I'm like, you know, am I really an alcoholic, or am I making this way bigger of a deal than it is? Like, have I been brainwashed? I do that. I'm a, you know, and it's like, that's what my disease tells me. Like, you could probably have a drink. You're making this way too big of a deal. And it's like, no, I'm not. I know exactly what happens. And as long as I keep doing what I'm supposed to be doing and doing the next right thing, I really feel like things are going to work out how they're supposed to. And, yeah, that's all I have. I think I'm almost out of time, right?
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Thanks, guys.
Oh, thanks, Lisa.